Good morning and welcome to Local Matters Health Matters, where we spotlight key health issues and community concerns across the Upper Cumberland. I'm Dr. Emily Lee and I'm joined by Dr. Jennifer Mabry. We're professors at the Whitson-Hester School of Nursing at Tennessee Tech University. Dr. Mabry is with us today to discuss national high blood pressure education and hypertension awareness, which is two very important topics. Dr. Mabry is a full professor at the Whitson-Hester School of Nursing. However, she has an extensive background in cardiology and in internal medicine, so she's going to tell us a little bit about her background. Thanks for joining us today, Dr. Mabry.
Thank you so much, Dr. Lee, for inviting me. My background. So I have been a nurse practitioner for 25 years now, and my career started out in internal medicine, as you said. So that's, for those of you that don't know what that is, for the listeners, I only did adults, and I did chronic illnesses. So if you had thyroid problems, high blood pressure, hormonal issues, endocrine diabetes issues, or all of those things at the same visit, I would take care of you. And I really enjoyed that. Then I moved into working at Tennessee Heart. I did that for 5 years. I was in that cardiology office. I only worked in the outpatient setting. I never worked in the hospital, so I still just saw patients and carried over from that internal medicine background where people would come in with chronic illnesses. And one of the main problems was high blood pressure. That is a prevalent issue in our area, actually in the whole United States. But so I did a lot of that. I did heart failure as well, which I really liked because it required a lot of patient education. And then my last part of my career has been teaching at Tennessee Tech.
Wings up.
Wings up, full time. So I have been doing that for since 2010.
15 years.
15 years, and that's how long I have known Dr. Lee as well. So that's my background, and I also teach. So in some of the subjects that actually Dr. Lee and I have taught together at Tech would be the MedSurg 1 courses, which is chronic illness, where we dive into diabetes and acute kidney problems or chronic kidney issues, liver. But we did talk about pulmonary and cardiac issues. And so her and I both have taught on those topics for a while now.
And now more into the family nurse practitioner students as well at Tennessee Tech,
where we teach chronic illness.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So let's get into talking about high blood pressure, hypertension awareness. Those terms are used interchangeably. If you want to explain the terms, but tell us, what is high blood pressure and why is it such a concern here in the Upper Cumberland?
So high blood pressure is defined. So there's a body of super smart people, much smarter than me, that do cardiology and do family practice. And they have defined blood pressure based on a number. So when you go and get your blood pressure done at a office, they put a device around your arm and it squeezes it. And so what they're doing with that is they're measuring the pressure. So what the heart is the pump. And it has to travel through pipes. And that's how I teach it to students and to patients. So you have a pump and you have pipes. So when the pressure from the pump, which is your heart, is too high in the body, that's what we call high blood pressure. And the ideal number for that would be the top number, which is a systolic number, to be 130 or less. And then the bottom number to be 80 or less. That's a myth that some patients don't feel like that's high blood pressure. But once you get to 131 on that top number, you're considered having elevated blood pressure.
Okay, so if I have high blood pressure, what are some of the common symptoms that I might or might not exhibit?
Great question. Great question. So a lot of the listeners may have heard it called the silent killer, and I'm using air quotes there because you really don't have any symptoms with high blood pressure until you have trouble with your eyes, or maybe you have trouble with your kidneys, or you may have trouble with your heart. And that would be heart failure because the pump is just, it's working too hard. So the importance of getting that checked And the guidelines actually tell us to get that starting at age 18, you need to have a blood pressure check every time you go to the doctor for a physical. And I don't think people do that enough because they feel good. So symptoms are nothing until you may have had other organs involved.
Absolutely. So how is high blood pressure diagnosed?
That's another great question. So a lot of people have blood pressure cuffs, and they can buy them at the CVS or at the Walgreens or Walmart. Or they even go into Kroger's or Walgreens and stick their arm into one of the automatic devices that's there by the pharmacy. So that's a one-time test. That is, you probably maybe stressed out, running through the grocery store or grabbing up some supplies for your kid at the pharmacy and checking your blood pressure. So that is not an accurate blood pressure check. That's a one-time, one-off, we call that. So to diagnose high blood pressure, you need to have that blood pressure checked professionally in an office by a healthcare professional or nurse at a health fair. And then you need to be relaxed when that happens. You need to be seated. You don't need to have smoked or ate right before you had that reading taken. And if it's still elevated then, so, you know, I've had it checked at the Kroger's, you know, pharmacy. I've gone to my healthcare provider, got it checked. It's still a little high. Then they're going to have you take it at home. They're going to have you take it at different times of the day. If that blood pressure is still above 130, over 80, consistently, different times of the day, then that's when we would consider you to have an elevated blood pressure.
Okay. So
not one time.
Not a one-time reading. And you mentioned several things, sitting down, don't smoke or anything before, you don't cross your legs, don't be talking. But how do I know if I go to Walgreens or Walmart or wherever and I buy this blood pressure cuff to check my blood pressure at home, how do I know that that's an accurate reading?
So the size of the cuff matters. And what I tell patients is the closer you get to your heart. So the ones that measure your blood pressure on your finger, not super accurate. If it's measuring on your wrist, more accurate than your finger, but not accurate. If I move up to above my elbow, that would be the most accurate blood pressure. And then getting the right size cuff. For that, if I'm a very large person, I need a large cuff. If I'm a small, really petite person, then I need a smaller cuff. So those are the factors you have to look at. And the pharmacist can help you, and also a nurse can help you get the right, correct size.
And you could have someone, you could check it with your new cuff and have them check it manually as well and
good.
Make sure your numbers are accurate. So that's a good way to know, because you want to make sure if you're checking your blood pressures that it is accurate. Proper fitting cuff is very important. So what are some of the main causes of high blood pressure?
Another great question. So your weight affects your blood pressure directly. That is the number one cause. Especially in the United States, is people that are overweight or obese. So, you know, I talked about the heart being a pump, and I talked about you having these pipes. So imagine if I have the same size pump, all of those people out there that are plumbers can understand this. I have the same size pump for my house, but I build on an extra 2,000 square feet of my house. Okay, I'm going to use that same pump to pump water to that whole house. It's not going to work. It's going to have to work harder. So that causes the heart to pump more and to pump more vigorously to be able to perfuse and get to all those parts of your body. So even just losing weight, and we tell people even a 10% weight loss can drop your blood pressure by about 10 points. 10 millimeters of mercury. So that is significant. So, you know, 240-pound person, if they lose 20, 24 pounds,
their blood pressure.
Yes, it's huge. So that's one of the main causes.
Okay.
Some other causes can be your diet.
Okay.
And we can get into that a little more. Stress is another biggie in our society today. That's something that's difficult to combat.
Mm-hmm.
And another cause could be your genetics, you know, something you can't change. Genetics age as we get older. Those pipes get used a little more from the pump, and that can cause it to work a little harder. They get stiffer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just part of aging. You can't really control that. You know, male versus female, you can't control that either. Main causes of high blood pressure.
Well, you mentioned diet and how diet can be a cause of high blood pressure. So what things specifically do listeners need to know about their diet?
So for diet, the main cause, and not everybody is affected by salt. So, you know, you hear people talk about, we've had some other providers on here talking about doing a nutritious diet and eating healthy whole foods. Well, the reason they're telling you that is because processed foods, so processed foods are the foods that are, you know, in a department store, in a grocery store that are in the middle aisles. Those are the reason why they're processed is because they're processed with salt, typically. I mean, that's how we used to preserve food, right? You know, our ancestors, to preserve a ham, they would salt it. They would salt meat and let it hang. And so that has carried over to the less processed food is, the less salt it has in it. So salt is a big trigger for people. It makes you hold on to more water in your body, and therefore the blood pressure.
Harder to pump
all
that water.
It's harder to pump all that water. Yep.
Okay, that makes perfect sense. So Dr. Jennifer Mabry, a local family nurse practitioner, she's talking hypertension awareness and high blood pressure education. Dr. Jennifer Mabry is our guest on Local Matters, Health Matters. We're talking about hypertension awareness and high blood pressure education month. We talked in the last segment about specific foods that can cause high blood pressure, but what about foods that can help lower blood pressure? Are there some foods that we could maybe, that might help us?
Evidence actually shows that a Mediterranean diet, and you know, here in the Upper Cumberland, that's not going to be a common diet that most people are going to know what that is. So, for educating the listeners, Mediterranean diet has to do with the kind of fats you use to cook with or to eat. I think it is more common now to eat olive oil, avocado oil, coconut oils. Try to stay away from canola oil and corn oils. Those used to be kind of a big thing that we told people to use, but now we do not as much. But we still do oil, olives, anything that has an oily base like that, that's a healthy fat, we tell people to use. That does help lower the blood pressure. It helps your pipes and your arteries to be a little more flexible. Fish, fresh fish, salmon, especially the fattier the fish, does help. So think about, you know, the way I think of a Mediterranean diet is I think of this, you know, cute little man fishing by over in Greece somewhere, you know, and he's eating, you know, fresh cheeses. He's eating homemade bread. He's eating very little processed foods, fish.
Fresh
whole grains, good oil, healthy oils. So those do help, you know, trying to not fry your food.
So you're saying I can't have fried catfish, fried walleye?
In moderation.
Yeah.
In moderation. When talking about moderation, we can also talk about alcohol. You know, that's one of those myths that people for a long time thought, you know, red wine's good for you. Well, more red wine's really good for me.
If I drink more of it, it's better.
Yeah, because it's grapes. But moderation is the key there. So, and for the listeners, what do we mean by moderation? One 12-ounce beer a day, a small glass of wine. So I'm talking a half a cup, maybe 4 to 5 ounces if you're a cook and you understand the sizes there, or one shot of hard liquor. And hard liquor is anything over 40% alcohol. So that's a day. That's it. So not two glasses of wine at dinner and then another one at bedtime. Not, you know, a whole six pack of beer at one sitting. Those actually will raise your blood pressure, so more alcohol will. But a little bit of red wine, absolutely, that is okay. You know, I joke with patients that could be biblical. You know, a little wine for the stomach.
Okay.
It's in the Bible.
It is. Mm-hmm. What about people who say, I hear this a lot, I don't use salt, so I'm controlling my sodium intake.
Don't use salt. So then the next question for those listeners would be, how much fresh fruit, fresh vegetables do you mm-hmm. use? Adding salt is one way mm-hmm. to get sodium in your diet, but a lot of foods have sodium. So looking at labels of containers and, you know, if it says soda or sodium mm-hmm. anywhere in the label, then that's salt.
Okay.
Yeah.
Kosher or sea salt is healthier than table salt. True or false?
False. Salt is salt. Kosher salt typically doesn't have iodine in it, which is an essential nutrient that we need. A lot of patients also tell me that they cook or barbecue with Himalayan salt uh-huh. or pink salt.
Yeah.
It's all salt. So,
okay. Yeah. Salt is salt.
Mm-hmm.
Good to know. So we've talked about food. How does exercise impact blood pressure?
That's the best. That's my favorite.
Yeah.
I already talked about weight, mm-hmm. and I am going to circle back to the weight. Mm-hmm. Somebody can determine, and everybody comes in different sizes. You know, I personally think a BMI chart mm-hmm. is not accurate for how healthy a person is. Based on your bone structure, your size, muscle mass, and those kind of issues. But we do go by waist circumference.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people are shaped like apples or some people are shaped like pears.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody has a waist somewhere. So men, if your waist is more than 40 inches in diameter, that's too much. If you're a woman and it's more than 35 inches, that's too much. That puts your risk of high blood pressure at a higher level, is a good way to put it. So then exercise.
Mm-hmm.
Aerobic exercise, where you get your heart rate up to where you are cannot comfortably carry on a conversation like you and I are doing right now,
mm-hmm.
Is what you want for that level of aerobic. It doesn't mean you have to go run a marathon of 26 miles. It doesn't mm-hmm. mean you have to exhaust yourself every time you work out. That's not mm-hmm. consistent aerobic exercise and actually can be harmful for you on your heart, the stress and strain of that. So just walking, you know.
Yeah, walking.
Brisk walking. Swimming is great for the joints. Bicycling, and we recommend 150 minutes per week. So that's 30 minutes for 5 days out of the week. So, you know, you always have a day of rest. I think that's important.
Okay. So 150 minutes.
Per week.
30 minutes a day. Mm-hmm. Does the 30 minutes have to be consecutive?
Great question. No. You know, and I love that people have these apps now on their phones and their watches that tracks how many steps they're doing and how much activity, you know, and what that's doing is it's measuring your heart rate. Once you get your heart rate up to a certain level, it'll consider that exercise versus you're just walking. Or even it'll ask you, are you exercising? Do I need to record this?
Mm-hmm.
I think those are great motivators to help people.
Yeah, I say yes.
I know.
I want it to record it.
I do too. Every time I'm like, yes, I'm walking.
Actually, I'd
quickly.
Walking.
Yes. Or I'm hiking. Yeah. So, that's the recommended 150 minutes. And no, you do not have to do it all at the same time. 10 minutes here, 10 minutes on your lunch break, 10 minutes, you know, walking the dog when you get home. It's great for you. It's great for your mind.
Mm-hmm. That's much more doable when you put it into perspective of I can break that down 10-minute increments.
Absolutely.
Much easier to attain, especially mm-hmm. with our busy lives.
Mm-hmm.
So we've talked about diet. We've talked about, you know, specific foods that could help us lower blood pressure, how exercise impacts our blood pressure. So what about other lifestyle changes that might help manage high blood pressure?
For back to exercise, strength training is also suggested. And what I mean by that is, you know, I'm not talking about going to the gym and lifting big, heavy weights. Strength training is you can use your own body weight to do that. And that's suggested twice a week along with aerobic exercise. And that will help lower your blood pressure. Just a consistent exercise program, statistics and has shown us that that can lower your blood pressure by 5 to 8 points, just starting an exercise routine. You know, and then if you add in losing weight on top of that, that's another 10 points. Some people can get off medication in that way, if they're on medication for their high blood pressure. So the other part of that question was other things that can help. So stress reduction is another thing that we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that's easier to say than it is to do. I know for me it is. You know, the first thing I try to tell myself is don't do too much. But we can talk about that in the next segment about ways to de-stress.
Yeah, absolutely. More information on high blood pressure and hypertension awareness when we come back. Our guest today is Dr. Jennifer Mabry on Local Matters, Health Matters. I'm Dr. Emily Lee, and we're both professors at the Whitson Hester School of Nursing at Tennessee Tech University. So in our last segment, we were talking about lifestyle changes, how to manage our high blood pressure. And the last thing we spoke about was stress and how that affects our blood pressure and how we can better manage our stress.
Yes. So stress is a big factor. And it's one you can control. You know, we talked about things that you cannot control, age, gender, your ethnicity you can't, you know, control. So, you know, it's more high blood pressure is more common in non-Hispanic black adults compared to white adults. So those things you can't change, but stress you can. Mm-hmm. So, you know, don't do too much. What I tell people is, you know, focus on your most important tasks for the day. Make a list. Dr. Lee and I are big list makers.
Mm-hmm.
Another important aspect to that is learning to say no and really knowing your limits and allowing yourself enough time to get stuff done. And I'm preaching to myself on this. You know, another way to help control your stress, especially at work or with your family, is focus on things that you can control. You know, I can control what I do after work. I can control people I talk to. I can control people I interact with. I can't control who I work for. I can't control, you know, conflicts that come up if it's with my children. You know, those things I really can't. I can work on myself, but you know, just learn to what you can control and what you can't to take that stress off. Staying away from stress triggers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were joking before this segment about people's triggers. You know, you say a word and it makes somebody feel a certain way or feel anxious. Well, that's real, you know, and if you can stay away from those triggers, you know, if rush hour traffic makes you super anxious, well, try not to take the main roads and become angry at people for driving the speed limit. You know, I mean, these sound like common things, but, you know, when you put it in perspective of staying away from stress triggers and you know what your triggers are, that helps. Taking time to relax. You know, we talked about the 150 minutes per week. That allows you 2 days off. You know, if you do 30 minutes a day, that's 2 days of downtime. That could be your Saturday, Sunday, Sunday, Monday, whatever your weekend is. Learn to let go, sit quietly. Deep breathe, go outside. I do believe in grounding outside in the natural nature earth, connecting with that, listening to the birds, not listening to, you know, your music or screen time. Just kind of focusing inward or enjoying a hobby. You know, if there's an activity, a hobby you like, my husband loves to do woodworking, loves to go down the barn. And as we say here in the South, he likes to piddle.
Yep.
Well, go piddle. I love to piddle.
Relaxes him.
It does. It relaxes him. And then practicing gratitude. Those are just some good things. I don't think we do that enough.
No.
Tell people we appreciate them. You know, look at things in our lives that we're grateful for, our health. You know, if you don't have high blood pressure, that's something you need to be thankful for. But those are good ways, I think, that are just common to help with stress. Sleep is another big trigger. 7 to 8 hours a night is really what is recommended. I know people say that they can go on 4 to 5 hours of sleep. That's a myth.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot. 7 to 8 hours is what has been clinically shown to improve your overall health and includes blood pressure. So now there's exceptions to that, such as if a patient snores a lot, or their partner tells them they snore, or a friend or a roommate says they snore, they may have sleep apnea, mm-hmm. which is another common condition that we have here in the Upper Cumberland. And if that's not treated, that can lead to high blood pressure, and it can also disrupt your sleep because you don't realize how often you're waking up when you snore, and you're not getting that good deep sleep that you should to make your body feel rested. Another is smoking. So stress, sleep, smoking, the three S's.
Mm-hmm.
And nowadays I have to include vaping. People say, you know, it's not the nicotine, but the nicotine is actually a chemical that makes your blood vessels shrink. So if I have a pipe and I take a chemical into my body that makes that pipe smaller and it squeezes down, then my blood pressure is going to go up, and that can cause your heart to work harder. You know, if it can also make your heart rate go up. It causes sleep disturbances because it's a stimulant. That's mm-hmm. why a lot of people do like to smoke, because mm-hmm. of that little kick they get. But anything that has nicotine in it is harmful to you. So smoking is not good for your body. And, you know, if nobody in the Upper Cumberland has been told that, now they have been told that by Jennifer Mabry. Do not smoke.
Do not vape. If you need help, there are ways to help people quit smoking if you want help to quit.
There is a quit smoking helpline at the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and you can see your healthcare provider. There's medications.
Yep.
There's patches, pills can help you wean off of that. So, absolutely.
Yep. So, another myth I'm curious about. You hear people
say,
I feel fine, so I don't need to worry about my blood pressure. I don't have high blood pressure.
For those people, you may feel great. I myself have high blood pressure, and I'm on medication. And before I got put on medication, I felt great. Had no idea until I went in for an annual exam. So unless you are getting your blood pressure checked by a healthcare provider the proper way, like we talked about in the first segment and multiple times, and can tell me that your blood pressure is below 130 over 80 consistently, then you're great. But if it's above that, you need to work on some things or maybe get some medication.
So once they're officially diagnosed, and we've talked mm-hmm. about how they get diagnosed.
Mm-hmm.
So they're officially diagnosed, then they get started on a medication.
Okay.
And say they start doing these lifestyle modifications. They work on their diet and they work on their exercise. They decrease their weight. They've decreased their stress. Their blood pressure's come down. They're in the normal ranges now. You said 130 over 80. So they're,
mm-hmm.
they're running less
mm-hmm.
than that. And they're doing great. And so they say, well, I can stop taking my medicine now.
And that's not accurate. That is a myth. So the medications that your healthcare provider can put you on, typically it takes more than one. Usually you have to be on a combination of different types of medication, different classes of medication, and they work together. And if your blood pressure is down to normal, that's where we want it. That's the goal. And if you stop your medicine, typically that your blood pressure will go back up. Now, you mentioned, Dr. Lee, about they've lost a little weight and they're exercising.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then we can maybe wean down mm-hmm. on some of those medications, but completely stopping them is not advised.
So you're saying they need to go back and see their healthcare provider?
Yes. And the healthcare provider will let them know, you know, do they need to see them in a month? You know, do they start a new medicine? Do we want to come off, you know, wean stuff down 6 months? Maybe they've got you on a year. But you need to trust the healthcare provider that's taking care of you.
Okay.
And not stop your medication.
Great advice. So don't stop your medication. Go back and see a healthcare provider.
Yes.
So We've talked about ways to diagnose, ways to prevent, improve. What are complications of untreated high blood pressure? We said it's a silent killer. What does that mean?
So the after effects of a high blood pressure over time that's not treated, that goes unnoticed, stroke, which can be life-changing or can actually end your life, is the main result of high blood pressure. Another one is having a heart attack. Mm-hmm. So heart disease or stroke. And, you know, people know the signs to watch out for, hopefully, for a stroke. That's FAST, you know, the acronym FAST, facial droop. Aphasia, which is they have trouble speaking. So eyes, vision problems it can cause. It can also cause difficulty with your kidneys, how they function, how they actually filter your blood. Can cause heart failure. We talked about that earlier. Kidney failure. So there is lots of consequences to having high blood pressure that has been undiagnosed. But, you know, I would really be concerned about strokes and heart attacks in the immediate, and then your eyes, kidneys, and heart failing long term.
So these complications from untreated high blood pressure, are they reversible?
If caught early enough, yes, they are reversible. Especially your eyes and your kidneys are very, very sensitive to pressure changes in your body. Heart failure, there's some good medicines out there on the market, but it just depends on how early it's caught. Just like anything else, you know, we've talked about a lot of screenings on this show, and you know, getting cancer screenings. Well, blood pressure should be right up there with it.
Every time you go to the doctor, they should be checking your blood pressure. And if you're not sick a lot, you should be going at least once a year for
once
your wellness check.
Yes. And I do think, you know, when we think about you know, a lot of people bash insurance companies about, you know, what they pay for, what they don't pay for. But, you know, every insurance company that I know of will pay for wellness.
Mm-hmm.
Every single one. Medicare, Medicaid, private insurance, they do want you to go get a once a year check. And what's included in that is a blood pressure check. And typically checking, they'll actually measure your waist. And that's why I mentioned about the waist size. So that insurance company is determining if you have a high risk factor for chronic diseases. So, you know, insurance companies, yeah, there's a lot of things wrong with our healthcare system, but I do not know a single program that does not pay for a preventative once a year check.
They want you to be healthy, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Jennifer Mabry, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing such important information about hypertension awareness and high blood pressure education for the community here in the Upper Cumberland. Thanks for tuning in to Local Matters, Health Matters. Until next time, take care and stay healthy.